Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in 1 Kings chapter 10, where the Queen of Sheba comes for a visit. We don't know an awful lot about the Queen of Sheba, and years ago, scholars used to think she might not even exist at all. It was always a bit of a smear on the Old Testament by those who were skeptical, and then, in 2012, archaeologists hit pay dirt. Almost 3,000 years ago, the ruler of Sheba, which spanned modern-day Ethiopia and Yemen, arrived in Jerusalem with vast quantities of gold to give King Solomon. Now, an enormous ancient gold mine, together with the ruins of a temple and the site of a battlefield, were discovered in her former territory. Louise Schofield, an archaeologist and former British Museum curator, headed the excavation on the high plateau in northern Ethiopia. She said, "One of the things I've always loved about archaeology is the way it can tie up with myths and legends. The fact that we might have Queen of Sheba's mines is extraordinary." An initial clue lay in a 20-foot stone, steel, or slab carved with the sun and crescent moon, the calling card of the land of Sheba, Schofield said. "I crawled beneath the stone wary of a 9-foot cobra. I was warned lives here, and came face to face with an inscription in Sabaean, the language that the Queen of Sheba would have spoken. On a mound nearby, she found parts of columns and finely carved stone channels from a buried temple that appears to be dedicated to the moon god, the main deity of Sheba, an 8th century BC civilization that lasted 1,000 years. It revealed a victory in a battle nearby, where Schofield excavated ancient bones. Although local people still pan for gold in the river, they were unaware of the ancient mine. Its shaft is buried some 4 feet down in a hill above, which vultures swoop. An ancient human skull is embedded in the entrance shaft. Sheba was a powerful incense trading kingdom that prospered through the trade with Jerusalem and the Roman Empire. The queen is immortalized in Quran and the Bible, which describes her visit to Solomon with a very, quote, great retinue, with camels bearing spices and very much gold and precious stones. Then she gave the king 120 talents of gold and a very great quantity of spices. It's like the old saying goes, give archaeology enough time and it'll eventually catch up to the Bible. In fact, nowadays, there's the growing awareness that to be skeptical of the archaeological evidence of the Bible is actually ignorant. The Bible has an amazing track record of standing up to its own claims once we dug in the dirt enough. That now, the actual scriptures we're reading today, which were once thought to be made up and phony and a myth, are now well-respected and pretty documented in the archaeological community. Believer, one thing you should always be confident of is the claims of the Old Testament. To visit the British Museum in London is to walk through the pages of Bible history with things that years ago people didn't even believe until they dug them up. Verse 1 tells us, when the Queen of Sheba heard about the fame of Solomon and his relationship to the Lord, she came to test Solomon with hard questions. Arriving at Jerusalem with a very great caravan, with camels carrying spices, large quantities of gold, and precious stones, she came to Solomon and talked with him about all that she had on her mind. Solomon answered all her questions. Nothing was too hard for the king to explain to her. When the Queen of Sheba saw all the wisdom of Solomon and the palace he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his officials, the attending of servants in their robes, his cupbearers, and the burnt offerings he made at the temple of the Lord, she was overwhelmed. She said to the king, "The report I heard in my own country about your achievements and your wisdom is true. But I didn't believe these things until I came and saw with my own eyes. But indeed, not even half was told to me. In wisdom and wealth you have far exceeded the report that I was told. How happy your people must be. How happy your officials who continually stand before you and get to hear your wisdom. Praise be to the Lord your God, who has delighted in you and placed you on the throne of Israel. Because of the Lord's eternal love for Israel, he has made you king to maintain justice and righteousness." And verse 10 says, "And then she gave the king 120 talents of gold, large quantities of spices, and precious stones. Never again were so many spices brought in as those the Queen of Sheba gave to Solomon." Now, it's important to note that back in those days, this was kind of a one-upsmanship. But here the Queen of Sheba is saying, I can't really impress you. You've already outdone all of the other rulers in the Middle East. But I am going to pay you a compliment, and I'm going to add what you don't have, which is out of my supply of spices. I want to supply you with the most richest spices I possibly can. This might seem a little bit off topic, but right now, Mr. Rogers is getting showered with praise and love and adoration by the three or four generations that grew up watching him. But you know, it's kind of like the King of Solomon. The people from all over the world, liberal reporters to conservative evangelicals, are recognizing that that man was special and the Spirit of God was upon him. He himself was a Lutheran minister with a double major in school, both in theology and in child psychology, who decided that the television set would become his pulpit to deliver the burden of the heart of God for kids. And the world today, like the Queen of Sheba, stood up, took notice, and now is lavishing his memory with praise. Like Solomon, he's a rare bird. The final part of the chapter is a summary of Solomon's splendor. We read that he made 200 large shields of hammered gold. Now, these were just showing off. Years later, another king, one of Solomon's descendants, would sell these off and replace them with shields of bronze. But that's another story we'll get to. Needless to say, you'll see these shields again. By the way, the splendor in this chapter is celebrating the kingdom of Israel at its absolute peak, its zenith, the top of the mountain. It'll never be this big or glorious again in the rest of Scripture. From now on, we'll begin to see the slipping of Israel. First, it splits in two in a civil war, but then it starts to lose its lands and cities one by one, and eventually its wealth, culminating at the end with the loss of its freedom. It's a bit like sin and the effect that sin has on us. Evil exacts its toll on each one of us, bit by bit, sacrifice by sacrifice, and always costs more than it pays out, as Solomon and his descendants would soon find. But for now, in this chapter, we get to see the blessings of God, just as he promised way back in the time of the Exodus when he made the covenant with them, and promised a land flowing with milk and honey, where the Lord would come to them for blessing, and their enemies would fear them. Verses 18 through 22 really go on about his wealth. But verse 22 says, the king had a fleet of trading ships at sea along with his ships of Hiram, once every 3 years at return, carrying gold, silver, ivory, apes, and baboons. Ha! Baboons, I knew it! I've been waiting a couple chapters to make that joke. But Solomon's income was 666 talents of gold. That's a staggering mountain of cash. He got it from taxes, tolls, customs, duty fees, trade, tribute, and gifts from foreign rulers. And all of this rich extravagance was enjoyed by Solomon, but it came at great price to his people, who worked hard to provide it. They complained after his death that the pace of work was far too high to build all of this palace and kingdom. They ask in 1 Kings 12 for a bit of reprieve, but his son Rehoboam foolishly says no, which sparks a revolt leading to the civil war that's coming. It seems as much as Solomon was blessed, and with the wisdom he had, he just didn't know when to stop. Remember that in Deuteronomy 17, the king was told to read the law once a year. And in those requirements for kings, we see things like do not place a foreigner over you or one who's not an Israelite. Verse 16 of chapter 17 of Deuteronomy says, the king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them. For the Lord has told you, you must not go back. He must not take many wives or his heart will be led astray. He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. It seems that Solomon forgot some of the key things that God told him to remember. Well, remember, don't forget.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.